Welcome to A Quiet Life. I'm your host, Ruth Amos. 1 Thessalonians 4 says, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. In this podcast, I chat to all sorts of normal Christians, asking them just how they live their quiet lives and how they integrate their faith into their daily lives. I hope that by listening, you will be encouraged to go out and live your own quiet life to the glory of God. You can find the episode show notes, the Quiet Life blog, and other resources at ruthamos.com.au. That's ruthamos.com.au. Now let's get on with the show. Hello, I'm Ruth. It's great to have you here on the A Quiet Life podcast. It is Wednesday, the 16th of October, 2019, as I record this, and it's episode 42. So obviously, this is the episode where you learn absolutely everything about the life, the universe, and everything. And if you get that reference, then you know some of my taste in reading. Anyway, episode 42, 16th of October 2019. And last Thursday was the 1 year anniversary of this podcast. So I celebrated that very quietly by myself because I was on holidays and I didn't even think about it when I was pre-recording for the other podcasts. But we've done it. We've gone for a whole year. And I also want to say, like, after my 40th episode was put up, Emmy commented that 40 was 30 plus 10. And I want to thank Emmy for that comment a lot because, yes, I did really, really want to get to 30 episodes. And then to get 10 more than that is actually a reasonable achievement. I'm quite happy with it. I'm thrilled about where this podcast is going, and I'm very excited because I just have so many great interviews coming up over the next little while, and I'm really looking forward to sharing them with you. Today's guest is Annette Young, and Annette is an author and a homeschooling mum, and we talk about how on earth does somebody actually write books while homeschooling four boys. It's quite fun. A good interview, and she talks a bit about nature and how much that blessed her, and I talked about that on my blog this week as well, because my blog was about going and seeing the tulips in Wynyard in Tasmania and Table Cape, and it was just a beautiful day out, seeing those tulips and the big fields of tulips. So huge fields of rows of colour. So, you know, row of yellow tulips and then some pink ones and then some purple and, you know, different petal types. But the thing was to stand in the middle of this field of flowers and just be surrounded by all of this colour was just so beautiful and not overwhelming, but refreshing. It just delighted the senses. It was just incredible. So I think in a way that if I was surrounded by that much color, that was man-made color, it would be jarring and it would overwhelm the senses and be hard to deal with. But God's creation and his color was just uplifting and refreshing and incredible. So I enjoyed that very much and took too many photos, which I chose not to bombard people with. But I've put a few photos in my blog. So if you want to see that, that would be very, well, hopefully uplifting for you as well. So as well as seeing the tulips on my holidays, because that took 3 hours out of a 2 week holiday, I did other things as well. My daughter Jess came and visited and we did family things and we had, you know, lots of family dinners and things. We checked out some new restaurants. We found a couple of really nice different Chinese restaurants. So that was great. I love dumplings. I would eat them all the time. And I even weeded the garden, which is, you know, not normal. I have a tiny little pocket handkerchief patch of garden that is mine. It's full of succulents and I take care of that. The rest of the yard is Moz's responsibility, but I'll weed my little succulent garden. I did that. I went for walks. I thought a lot about organizing my life and how I want it to be. Because before my holidays, I was feeling really quite overwhelmed by the amount of stuff that I've taken on. So Yeah, I thought about that, what I wanted to do with my life and stuff. We'll see what comes out of those thoughts. I listened on audiobook, which is the same thing-ish, to the book The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, which I know is old, but there seemed to be a lot of wisdom in there, and I've changed the way I do my weekly to-do list. I get really nerdy about things like this. I really like thinking about how to organize your time and how to list your things and how to divide your life up and how to be effective and how to be efficient and, you know, really trying to find that silver bullet where I feel happy with my life and can do everything I want to do while feeling content and peaceful in it all. I'm not there yet, believe it or not. But, you know, we keep moving forward and we keep trying. I don't know that I'll ever get there, but I think it's a, you know, it's a good something to aim for. So, yeah, that was my holidays. I also did a bit of brainstorming about a new novel that I want to write because National Novel Writing Month is coming up in November. And so that is a 30-day challenge where you try and write 50,000 words in 30 days, a novel of 50,000 words in 30 days. It's an international thing, started in the US, obviously, with that name, National Novel Writing Month. It's often called NaNoWriMo, and I'm going to be doing it. So that means that I need to write at least 1,667 words every day for the month of November. So before I get there, I really want this book to be outlined and ready to go so I know exactly what's happening. So I'm going to write a fun little story I think will be set in Cygnet in Tasmania, and I think at this point in time will involve aliens, just for something fun to do. So yes, this is not a deep literary work. This is not going to win me a Pulitzer Prize or a Man Booker Prize or anything exciting like that. It's just hopefully going to be fun and funny and joyful to read. So that's November. So in order to set aside time to do that, I'm going to spend the rest of this month really trying to get lots of things done early. We'll see how it all goes. It's not a drama if it doesn't happen. It's just what I'm trying to do. So that's me this week. And in the coming week, I'm going to have my parents come and stay with us for a while. So that will be fun as well. I love having my parents around. And I'll chat to you more about that next Wednesday. I, you know, don't actually really know what next week's going to look like. And as I said to somebody yesterday, I really like things to be under control and to know what they're going to be in advance. And she said, well, how's that going for you? And I said, yeah, it doesn't work. I mean, it never does. That's not what life is like, but that's what I'd like life to be like. But we shall see what happens this week as it unfolds. And I will chat to you next Wednesday. And I'm just so happy to be back with the podcast and chatting to you guys again and having this all going. This is something I really, really love to do and I think is very worthwhile. So, enjoy the interview with Annette. We'll listen to how she does her life and how she came to know the Lord. Today's guest is Annette Young. Annette is the cousin of a good friend of mine, and she is also a writer, which is wonderful, and she's written two absolutely beautiful, now I've put historical fiction. Is that how you advertise your gorgeous book?
Yes, I seem to fall into that category. Yeah.
Which they called A Distant Prospect and By Violence Unavenged, and I will put links to them in the show notes, obviously. They're very good. And Annette also homeschools her four boys. I've got that right, haven't I?
You have.
Yes. And we'll have a chat about that as well. She lives on the mainland, and if you're not a Tasmanian, that means the big island of Australia. And we met in person for the first time when she came down to launch By Violence Unavenged, and that was really good, and we chatted for ages and ages. So I'm really excited to be able to introduce Annette to everybody who's listening and to be able to talk with her again. So you're very welcome, Annette.
Thank you.
So, first question I always ask everybody is, how did you become a Christian?
Right. That is quite a long story. One thing, I was brought up as a Christian, even if nominally sometimes. And I had experimented through school. There was always a sense that God wanted me for something. There's always been that thing. So even though I've gone through my agnostic phases and atheistic phases, there's been contradictory to my sometimes atheism that, no, there is a God and I'm here for something. But the first big turn, well, I went to some Billy Graham things when I was in my early teens at high school, and that was quite inspiring but not very long lasting. But the really big one was actually at Cradle Mountain. When I was 17, I did the big walk across Cradle Mountain in Tasmania. And it was that being out in nature without any of the trappings of city life, and seeing that sun come up and the sun go down, beautiful mountain sunsets. It rained most of the time. And then after that, we went to Wineglass Bay where we were camping. And that is when I had my God moment, that God existed. I can remember walking across that beautiful bay and thinking, yes, God exists. And I had the words from Corinthians come, that if I have love, I have nothing. And that was it. God existed. Therefore, I had to do something about it. And it was as clear as that. And from then on, it's been, from that moment on, it was, yes, I've got to find out more. I've got to do more. I've got to work this out.
So that was the 1 Corinthians 13, you know, if I do all this but don't have love, I am nothing.
That's it.
That's the best. Yeah, well, when you say you experimented in school, I thought that was an interesting term. What did you experiment with?
I think I was just questioning lots of things. So I'd go, you know, I'd go off to my friends' fellowships and stuff like that. I would ask lots of questions. I was the kid who would sit at the back of the classroom, you know, sort of leaning back on the chair, listening to everything, not necessarily contributing, but then asking the really sticky question. I'd, you know, dip into the Bible from now, you know, now and then. I've always been a big history buff, so history lessons were quite fascinating. And I can remember studying the Reformation and being horrified by Calvin and Zwingli for destroying all the things that I loved, which is art and music and dancing and that sort of thing. And then being really taken by St. Ignatius of Loyola and this do all things for the glory of God. And so it's been up and down, this sort of thing, going to Billy Graham things, various, you know, sort of things that would happen at school. So it was that sort of quiet experimentation.
Yeah, cool.
And lots and lots of questions, as one asks when one does experiments, one asks questions.
Yeah. And then you get to that point and you say, right, line in the sand here, and that happened in our beautiful nature here in Tasmania, so that's pretty cool.
Yes.
See, everybody, you need to come to Tasmania. It's good for you. Actually, I think there really is something about nature being good for the soul, isn't it? It's just gets you back in touch with what's actually real.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. So when did you decide to start writing?
That was very late. That was I was in my mid-30s, and it was while I was doing my PhD or beginning work on PhD, and I was doing some work on Charlotte Bronte's early manuscripts, things that she wrote when she was a kid. And I had the opportunity to live another person's life, another person's imaginative world, in writing out and preparing these works for publication. And I realised that she and I did sort of the same thing. We had imaginary friends and we lived out their exploits. And I thought at that point, well, if she can do it, so can I. And I've always had this way of processing much of my life experiences through my imagination. And so I thought, right, well, I'm going to harness what I'm doing. and write a book myself, and happened to be that I was doing a PhD in literature. So there's no better way of understanding how a novel works than to actually sit down and attempt one for yourself.
Yes, true.
And that is what happened. And I did, and I never thought I'd ever be a writer. That was one of the last things I ever expected myself to be. And so I really did fall into it. And it was in doing that that I really discovered something I could do. I've been able to do many things, but that was something that really was mine. It was the thing that I was meant to do.
Yeah, I totally understand that. I feel very similarly about it. That this fills that hole inside that I didn't even realise was there, and it makes me very happy to do this. So,
Yes. And to be able to connect with others through it, that was the most shocking experience.
Shocking.
A shocking experience because, when you've had that imaginative world, it's been your very private world, you've really lived most of the time with your own thoughts and never really shared those things with others to a deep degree. And then to write a book where it all comes out and have people connect over that, yes, it was very confronting. It was shocking.
I can see that.
I continue to be surprised at people's eagerness to respond.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? And I know that a lot of us are quite introverted. You spend a lot of time sitting by yourself at your desk doing your writing and talking to yourself in a way, and then to have other people read it and then respond to you is like, oh, okay.
Are you serious?
So faith is very important to you and writing is very important to you. How do those two things intersect in your life?
Oh, boy. Well, they intersect very much. Writing is very much a manifestation of faith and also that struggle in relation to faith. There's a lot of that in it. How do I explain this? Because many times in my life I've often felt silenced in not being able to speak out as I wish, not to be able to say the things I would like to say, and writing gives me that chance to have my voice, to be able to say what needs to be said. Sometimes people don't want to hear what you have to say, and writing gave me that chance to be able to say the things that I want to say that sometimes, when you're talking to somebody and you said, I wish I'd said that, or they don't want to hear it from, but they're prepared to hear it in their own private nest when they're reading a book. There's something about that very private act of reading where certain things can be said that don't even have a place sometimes in the most intimate conversations. It's a real moment for the soul many times. And then with writing, very much in some ways, although I don't write by autobiographically, there is a spiritual autobiography going on, and some of the struggles of characters are very much things that I myself have struggled with and had to come to terms with and thought through or not thought through. Some things are still questions, but yes, writing is very that intimate part. Sometimes one is writing one's prayer life out.
Yeah, I love that. That's gorgeous. So you are homeschooling four boys, and how on earth do you find time to write as well as homeschool? How do you do this?
Everybody asks me that question. It's a juggling act. A lot of the thing you do help them to learn for themselves. And also homeschooling is wonderful because of its flexibility that you teach each child according to their needs. It takes a lot less time than normal school would. So, everybody thinks that I school for 6 hours a day, then I sit down and write. Well, I don't. I school for about 2 hours a day.
Yeah.
And then the afternoons are free for everybody. So the afternoons are my writing time. And so I'll get down and do something of an afternoon, usually between sort of 2 and 5, although I've had a sabbatical this year. I haven't written anything at all and decided to get back into it this month. So, quite frankly, I can't bear not writing anymore.
I totally understand that. But your books, I mean, do you start with doing a whole lot of research, or do you start by writing things out and then see what research needs to be done afterwards, or how does that work?
It's a mixture. It depends on the topic. And look, you know the funny bunny trails you go down and you end up checking as a writer, and especially with historical fiction, you go down some really bizarre little trails. I start off with, I have a story in mind, and then the research is done to flesh out the story.
Yeah.
Definitely. And one thing that's been really hard that's actually stopped me from writing the second volume is that the research is incomplete. But then I reminded myself that the research was very much incomplete with By Violence Unavenged when I began it too, and I simply had to start with the story and then work in the details as I found out the details themselves. So there'll be a lot of reworking. And so it's one goes hand in hand with the other.
It's the story that's important, really, isn't it?
Yes.
Everything has to support the story.
That's right. You've got to tell the story.
Yeah.
And then the details have to support the story. And see, that's often with writers of historical fiction, it's very easy to get bogged down in the historical detail and the historical circumstances, and they can start drowning the story.
Mm.
And getting that balance between character and emotion and then the circumstances in which that takes place is a very tricky one to handle, especially when you've got readers who have various degrees of knowledge. You've got the train spotters, you've got the professors who, you know, love that you treat their pet period or any period with the respect that it deserves, and then you've got the persons who are completely ignorant of any of it, and they're dipping into your book, and all of a sudden, you know, there's this train load of, you know, German history coming at you in full throttle, you know. So, you know, in many ways you just got to leave the reader to deal with what they have to, what they can manage or not manage, and just hope for the best.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yes. So, yes, this is to say that the first book that I mentioned, A Distant Prospect, is set in Sydney, but By Violence Unavenged is largely in Vienna and around the time of the beginning of the Second World War. Yes. So.
Yes, just before. Yeah.
Just before. So, yeah. So there's there probably quite a few people who have that as their favourite period, I would have thought.
It's a fascinating period. But nobody's, especially in the English language, nobody's really done Austria.
Mm.
And Austria is fascinating. And it really, look, it was writing A Distant Prospect and having to consider World War One from the non-Anglo perspective that really got me very interested in European affairs between wars, and my whole idea of history just changed so much with looking at things from that other angle. And so away we went with Austria.
Yeah.
And I think it helps too because we can become so comfortable in our own viewpoint, especially because we won the war. We won the war, in inverted commas. Nobody wins wars. But that notion of, therefore, because we won, we must be right, when that is absolutely not necessarily the case. And, you know, considering things from these different angles makes for a very interesting engagement, which can be, yes, I think, hopefully quite life-changing, certainly very thought-provoking.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. Cool. Let's turn to homeschooling. So why did you decide to homeschool?
Lots and lots of different reasons. First of all was my own school experience, which was less than desirable. Secondly, because to be able to teach our kids in a way that they could learn a variety of things, not get stuck into a system. Thirdly was faith and morals, definitely, because of certain things that have been taught at schools. And I could see myself rocking up, thought, you are teaching what? and that there are so many things that happen in a school that are just so beyond our ability, you know, what we can actually do that can be so harmful. and to have a certain degree of, well, control, influence, I should say, is probably a better word, over those things was very important, to be able to give our kids a really broad, rich education, particularly with literature and history, as well as, you know, the sciences, the arts, as much as we could, to be able to give them a chance to develop their own interests and their own qualities, were all very important.
Mm. Are you part of a group of homeschoolers around where you live that you get together? And I know there's groups like that here in Hobart. So
there are lots of groups everywhere, and yeah. Constantly morphing groups. yes, we're very much. I sort of dabble around a whole lot of things, but at the root of it, I do like the Charlotte Mason approach. Charlotte Mason was a 19th century educator,
right.
And the most critical to her was the education as a means to develop the life of virtue in a child through the appreciation, deep appreciation of the gospels, of history, of art, of music, of all the good things in the world, nature, maths, the sciences, but seen as a very whole sound, rich, deep, dynamic thing, but all contributes to the flowering of the human person.
Mm.
And that was, yes. I don't know whether I'm actually achieving that. All these things are always a work in progress.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. But, I mean, school teachers are human beings just as much as mothers are human beings, and so we've got to...
And children are themselves.
Yes. That's exactly right. Yeah. Each one of us fallible, but each one of us had something to bring to the equation as well. So.
That's right. But the integrity of the human person is just something that is just so important, and it's something that I really do try and express in my writing as well as in, you know, in life, that is just so vital. Our relationships, our person, who we are and what we are here for, is one of the most fundamental questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, and a continual growth question over life. I know that I'm asking that question and changing the answer every 5 years or so.
This just reminds me of that Facebook post put up this morning about the philosophers. Who are we? Philosophers, what do we want?
What do we want? Yeah.
Why are we here?
What are we here for? Definitely. And you have the time. I guess that's the thing, that in your homeschool, it sounds like in your daily routine, you have the time to ask those deep questions and think it through.
Oh, yes. Cool. So at least I do have the time to ask them. My children ask them.
I guess
you have to do maths. Or do you really want me to do that, or can I do something? And when are we going to make gingerbread men?
Yeah, well, of course. And they're the really big questions.
That's right, yes.
Cool. So when do you feel close to God?
When do I feel close to God? I go through my phases. When do I feel close to God? You know, possibly more when things go wrong than when things go right. You know how, you know, you're going through those hard times and you just throw yourself at God's feet. Those hard times happen actually quite a lot, so that happens often. It would be those times, yes, in prayer. There are times also, the funny thing is the things like the washing up, the kitchen sink, the clothesline, it's those vacant times, those times when your mind is often free, doing the ironing, that you can actually go down and pray. Then I've developed a really renewed interest in reading the Bible. The Bible's come alive for me lately, and at the moment I'm actually reading Mark's Gospel with my kids, and it's been a very fascinating insight into Jesus's public life and how we deal with other people, and seeing these messages come through has just been, and these insights into human nature and some of the scurrilous characters that and also, you know, human freedom and Jesus's respect for that has just been the most amazing thing. Like the leper who, you know, Jesus cures, and then he tells, you know, says, you know, show yourself to the priest, you know, as per Jewish custom, but don't tell anyone. And the fact that Christ commanded him, don't tell anyone, and he did. Is so illustrative of our freedom.
Yeah.
And God would have known that he was going to do that anyway. But to illustrate how, you know, that it wasn't, he didn't talk about our Lord because he was commanded to, but because he wanted to. And, yeah, these sorts of insights have just been great. And, you know, today we read about Salome and the dance before Herod and John the Baptist's martyrdom, the head of John the Baptist on the platter. And, you know, Max, my 13-year-old, just said, oh, yuck. But the wickedness, you know, the wickedness, the conspiracy of the mother and daughter, and the king who is just so keen to please and to show himself off as, you know, being able to fulfill whatever he oathed, and, you know, not really caring what he did. You know, it was such a boast, and it's just so awful, you know, compared to, you know, and, you know, that sort of love for the world compared to what Christ instructs the disciples before of, you know, going out and preaching, you know, from every village. And if they reject you, we'll just shake the dust off your feet and continue on and don't worry about it. And so it was just a fascinating juxtaposition, and coming into the Bible like that and doing, especially doing kids, this has been wonderful.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, so lots of food for thought there.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, no, I was listening to a podcast where the guy was saying that good literature can stand being reread over and over again, and I think if there's any book that can handle that, it's the Bible. It can handle the Bible. You read it and you read it again next week, something new is going to pop out at you, and then, you know, next year something completely different. So it's amazing. It's an amazing gift to us.
Yeah, mind you, I would never have admitted to that at the age of 20, you know, 13 or 14. Yeah. Skeptical nonsense, crap book. Sorry. So, in my maturity, I am coming to develop more of a respect for it.
Too real. Okay, what's one thing about God or Christianity that you wish everyone knew?
How good it is. Look, the fact that it's so simple, really, it is so simple that there are only 10 commandments, and if we actually followed them, life is pretty good. That when we trust in our Lord, that the graces that come from that trust are immense and wonderful, that there is a wonderful that relationship that we can have with God and that God wishes to have with us. How special is that?
Yeah, it's amazing.
And the goodness of life that comes, you know, it's and such a positive, vibrant force. It's a, I think that's what's so shocking about Christianity is the fact that it is so positive. And that, you know, that this rooting on love is, you know, in with so much depth, faith, hope and love together is just so astounding, because it is so natural to us to love, and the fact that that can be realised in all its fullness, finally in heaven, of course, is just the most amazing thing.
Yes, I think we forget. I agree, just how good Christianity is, how good God is, you know, and and then even the word good gets taken and given a twist to stop it meaning what it actually means. But yeah, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing to be a Christian.
Yes, it's funny, I have wonderful chats with my boys, but my 13-year-old, the one who objected to the martyrdom of John the Baptist, we had a chat earlier about the Garden of Eden and the first sin, and the do not eat from the tree of good and evil. And why not?
Mm.
Really, of course, we couldn't handle the consequences of it.
Mm.
The knowledge of evil for man was just more than he could bear, and God knew that in his goodness, but we did it. And it's that corruption of our innocence, that shock of suddenly, you know, when children suddenly see something that is not very nice, and that scarring that happens upon them, and that's what happened to us. And because we find evil just unbearable.
Yes.
And when we can't decide between good and evil, because our understanding of it has been blurred, the difficulty we have, the tragedy that's there, and it's heart-rending.
Yeah. Yeah.
In a sense.
Absolutely.
But we write good books about it, so it's all right.
Everything is grist for the mill for the book.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely everything. Well, thank you so much for chatting with us today, Anna. It's been wonderful.
Oh, thank you, Ruth. Yeah, good to see you again. Oh, yes, yeah, good to see you again.
Good to see you again. Even if not in person. Cool. And I will make sure, well, because I'm sure there's so many people listening who want to read your books now, so I'll make sure that's all in the show notes so people can find them and read them because they're excellent.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Good to see you.
So thank you, Annette, and let's all remember the goodness of God and the goodness of our life with him as we go through the next week. Next week's interview is with Michelle, and Michelle's a dentist. We talk about why she enjoys dentistry, why she and her husband Cameron moved here from South Africa, and there's some pretty exciting stuff about prophecy in her life, all in a beautiful South African accent. I want to thank Catherine Joy from Joy Music House for the music, and thank you Matt Dobson for transcription of this show. And just remind you again, don't forget to rate this show on iTunes if you could, or subscribe to it through whatever podcast catcher you use, or share it with a friend, and let's get the word out and get these stories heard by others. And I will chat to you again next week.